Now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried, distracted about many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." The word of the Lord. It's a bit of a surprise to come across this story when we do. Jesus has just finished the great story of the Good Samaritan with all the energy it took to dream it up and all the energy it took to tell it and all the energy and feedback he undoubtedly received for telling it. Immediately, Luke shifts gears and tells about a squabble between two sisters. One of them preparing a big meal for Jesus, while the other skips the hard work, sits and listens to him. The story starts here. A domestic squabble between two siblings. And if you are not an only child, you know something about this. On Saturday mornings, my father would lace up his work boots and call out indiscriminately, "I need some help out in the yard." My sister and I reacted in different ways. She would lace up her junior work boots, run outside, and say, "Here I am. What do you have for me to do?" As for me, I was a bit more reflective. I would pause to contemplate the philosophy of doing manual labor. And sometimes, while I was thinking about this, I would go to a quiet spot where nobody would bother me. And then I would lock the bathroom door and read through a biography of an important person like George Washington. And I would spend time pondering if famous people ever did yard work. In time, someone short and mouthy would pound at the door and declare in a piercing cry, "You need to come outside and help me and Dad." And I would ignore her, since that was already my habit, because I was busy. She would pound again, and then she would take the dispute to a higher authority. Isn't that what's happening here? So I feel vindicated when I hear Jesus soothe the hard-working sister, "Martha, Martha," or in this case, "Debbie, Debbie, you are worried and distracted by many things. Martha, Mary has chosen the better part." It's not an exact parallel, but it works for me. And it's a surprise that Luke would tell a story like this. A story of two siblings, one of them annoyed at the other. Of course, it's not the only such story. Once upon a time, he says, there was a man with two sons. The good son stayed home, worked hard in his father's fields, while the other son ran off and squandered his share of the family fortune. Now, in that story, we're invited to sympathize with the good son, who watches his wayward brother stumble home with a hangover to a welcome home banquet all the time he's been working hard and has done nothing wrong. Today we have the story of two sisters. One is in the kitchen and one is not. Martha is the diligent one and she is perturbed. She's working hard. She doesn't have any help. So she says, "Lord, tell my sister to come and help me, because I bet she's cooking up one enormous meal while Mary's just sitting there. And can you blame her for being annoyed? And then we have Mary, who sits at the feet of Jesus, the posture of receptivity. She listens to his voice, sets her own agenda aside, receives his instruction, and presumably, like the other Mary in this gospel, ponders all things in her heart. This is the Gospel of Luke, after all, and Jesus is on center stage. He's the one we should be listening for, the one we should be listening to. And if Jesus came to your house, wouldn't you wish to sit at his feet? Now, you know the usual way that this story is used. It's held up like a mirror, and the question is then asked, so which one are you? Are you the hardworking Martha, focused on the tasks at hand, doing the necessary preparations behind the scenes, watching the clock, boiling the potatoes, tending to all the necessary details? Or are you devoted Mary, gazing into the face of Christ, free from worry, focused on the deep significance of the moment, and not bogged down by the unnecessary details? Some are drawn to Martha, others attracted to Mary. That's often actually how this story is often kind of given to us. But it's not that simple. The Marthas who love details need their Jesus time too. And they intend to get it. But first, the vegetables must be peeled, the meat must be cooked. And the Marys, they can't merely float on air. There are necessary life tasks that simply must get done. Parker Palmer, a good Quaker, says you can't divide life like that. You can't divide life into action or contemplation. For us to be fully alive, we need both together. There's always work to be done. And there's always a need to reflect, to find the wisdom and meaning in what we do. Palmer says you can't have one really without the other. As he puts it, when we fail to hold the paradox together, when we abandon the creative tension between the two, then both ends fly off into madness. That is what often happens when contemplation and action are treated in our culture of either or. Action flies off into frenzy, a frantic, even violent effort to impose one's will on the world, or at least survive against the odds. Contemplation flies off into escapism, the flight from the world into a realm of false bliss. So he says, we need both doing and being, working and being still. The necessary skill is then to hold these together. And that's not as simple as it sounds. It's hard. Now, the easy way is to do what a lot of people do. They work hard for a while, then they go on vacation. They alternate between labor and rest. They put in the time at the office or the school, and then they keep the weekends free. But what I'm noticing a lot these days is that many people don't know how to keep their weekends free. And I'm starting with retirees. As one person said, I didn't know how I ever got everything done when I was working. Every free moment jammed full by people who are then gasping for air. All Martha, no Mary. And the healthy person has to be both. We've got to cultivate this. When my daughters were small, they would run around and be busy. And when they ran out of things to do, they would come in and say, I'm bored. And I learned to respond, that's good. It's good to be bored, because bored means you're not busy. And pure busyness is pure evil. They would look at me strangely. I'm sure they would tell their friends they had a really weird father. I'm okay with that. After they would grump around for a while, declaring how bored they were, I would pour them some lemonade and say, "Come, sit under the maple tree with me for a bit." And then I would give them speech number 73. It goes like this. You can't sustain an active life without also developing an interior life. Read a book, learn some poetry, walk in the woods, write in a journal, do some art, listen to a big piece of music, sit by a crackling bonfire and think about your day, or best of all, immerse yourself in a sea of silence. Let these things deepen you, thicken you. Put some pauses in every day. Don't just do something. Stand there. That's speech number 73. Do you know why I've memorized it? So I can give it to myself. It's hard work to be like Mary and Martha at the same time, to get the work done and to be still about it. To stay contemplative while active while contemplative. It's difficult for a lot of reasons, but I think one big reason is we live in such a distracted age. People are always playing thumbs on their smartphones. Always have to be connected, always have to have the TV on, always have to have the computer on, always have to bounce from one activity to another, always have to keep the calendar crammed full. So I think what Jesus is doing today is offering a situational corrective. Martha storms out of the kitchen with her dirty apron, demanding Mary get off her duff and help her out. And Jesus makes this a teaching moment. He turns to Martha and with the gentlest voice possible declares to all the Marthas in our midst that there is a time for good work. Good work is good. But there's never a time to be distracted by many things. Never a good time to be anxious. Jesus knew how to work hard. He healed one person after another, spoke to enormous crowds, never had a minute's rest from his own stupid disciples, was always on when people were around, and yet he could say, which one of you, by being anxious, can add an inch to the span of your life? Look at the birds of the air. They're not looking. Look at the lilies of the field. The most opulent king in Israel's history was not dressed as gorgeously as they. So Martha, this sermon's for you. If you're burning the candle at all three ends, here's a good time to go look at the birds. Admire the lilies. That pause, that sacred pause, is the essence of Sabbath. It is God's gift of time for the restoring of our souls, an invitation to rest in the Lord and let God run the world for a while without your help. You could take that time today, but you have to do it. You could build that time into every day. It's not always simple, but it really comes down to that. So my friend Debbie Hamrick is an executive administrator of a large church in Alabama. She's the lady with the clipboard. You know what that means? She's the one always on top of the detail. She schedules the meetings. She oversees the payroll. She watches the budget. She deals with the contractors. You get the idea. I have never met someone so organized, so capable in so many ways. And it was then that she was invited to squeeze one more thing into her life. She was invited to be on the staff of an annual church training conference, to be led by Presbyterians and Episcopalians. It involved a week of training in Memphis. Each day would begin with worship. Sometimes the Presbyterians would lead it, and then other times the Episcopalian priests. Well, At the end of the week, the final service was to be led by the Episcopalians, and it promised to be very long. There were lots of scripture readings, a lot of standing and sitting, more standing and sitting. She said, also some genuflecting, for God's sake. And then this gentleman stood to share the sermon. He was well up into years, long into retirement. He looked a bit disheveled, like an absent-minded professor. He spoke with a southern twang. He spoke without notes, which would have been a good idea, because he had a hard time seeming to collect his thoughts. But then he began to tell a story about being raised by his grandparents. They were good, solid country folk. His granddad would go off every year to get the Thanksgiving turkey and then stuff a live turkey into a burlap sack and then get on the trolley and bring it home. Now, this is when the story got really good, she said, as seen through the eyes of a 9-year-old boy. He went to the backyard as granddad came back. The axe would fall, the turkey's head would be gone, and then that turkey would take off running. It would run and run and stumble and get up and then run some more, which was pretty cool stuff for a 9-year-old kid, a headless turkey running around the yard. And Debbie's sitting there thinking, where's this guy going with this story? Here we are with a bunch of robed up clergy with all their high church finery and Episcopalian smoke, and he's talking about a headless turkey. And then he paused and said, the moral of the story, activity is not a sure sign of life. Did you get that? Activity is not a sure sign of life. Martha, Martha, you are distracted and worried by all you think you have to do. Yet here I am. Come and sit with me.